Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten, mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnet? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto, das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Namaste. I'm Devina Gupta. And on this edition, in a minute, scenes in a Washington congressional committee as the boss of Boeing faces lawmakers who have big questions about the company's safety culture.
Premier aerospace manufacturer, this is what you and the flying public have every right to expect from us.
We find out where does the US plane maker go from here. Also, we take a look at President Biden's new policy that is bound to change lives of tens of thousands of immigrants married to U.S. citizens.
This undocumented status has prevented him from being able to see his parents back in Brazil. He has not seen his mom since he was 18 years old.
All the details of that story and why stock exchange workers are going on strike in Italy coming up on World Business Report. But first, let's start with this news from our colleague James Wickham.
The sound of the closing bell at the New York Stock Exchange. And the cheering is probably for the world's most valuable company. In the early afternoon of Tuesday on Wall Street, Nvidia, the chipmaker that's at the forefront of AI, became the most valuable publicly traded company in the world. It's the first time it's beaten both Apple and Microsoft to the prize position, with its market capitalization now at $3.335 trillion. And it's very much the darling of the market at the moment.
It's surprising. You know, they certainly are in a business that should have substantial growth, and obviously investors are already accounting for that.
But Melissa Brown, Managing Director of Applied Research at SimCorp, also has worries.
Investors have to own these stocks. If not, they're just taking too much risk relative to the market. But if something should happen and those stocks should start to fall, it's going to take everybody down with it.
This is all because of a massive boom in demand for chips, because of the desire to run generative AI models like OpenAI's ChatGPT. And as a result, Nvidia just keeps growing and growing. Its market value went from $300 billion to $1 trillion to $2 trillion in just 9 months in February, and then it took just over 3 months to hit $3 trillion US dollars in June. Who knows where it'll end up next?
So, Nvidia is the world's most valuable company for the first time. Ross Gerber, president of Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment, is with us through the program. Ross, what James just wrapped up for us, how Nvidia, this US chip maker, has been able to get to $3.3 trillion in just a matter of few months. In fact, it has dethroned Apple and Microsoft, both companies which have decades of experience and also proven portfolio there. Was it a surprise for you?
Well, it's not a surprise for me, and it's also the top holding at my firm, so it's been an incredibly great run for us. You know, we've owned Nvidia for about a decade, and we really made a bigger investment about 8 years ago with regard to autonomous driving, really. But Nvidia has actually been a leader in their respective industry, which originally was for gaming graphics chips from the beginning. I think what's amazing about the story is how this gaming graphics chip company has morphed through this incredible focus on technology and incredible execution from management to be able to not only create the most in-demand and unique and important hardware for AI, but also the software behind it, but also executing in a way where they're able to meet the demand and maintain margins in the 70% range. So this is unheard of in business to grow like this with so much revenue,
but
with
Russ,
such high margins.
You said that it's obviously part of your portfolio. What about the investors? And just like we heard one point of view there, who are questioning whether this rise is actually sustainable, because you're talking about nearly 140% gains just this year alone.
Well, yes, but remember, the stock market was well behind the massive increase in earnings that NVIDIA has seen in the last year or two, really the last year. So you're talking about a company whose earnings went up by hundreds of percent in just the last year. And not only just that, the quality of the earnings and the cash flow is just massive. I mean, $15 billion in the quarter.
But of course, let's not forget, there is competition in the market as well. AMD, Intel, both the companies that are also making chips, trying to play that catch-up. Ross Gerber, be with us. Let's take a look at another company at Capitol Hill, where Boeing's boss, Dave Calhoun, was walking into a packed room and he was ready to face the lawmakers who grilled him about his company's safety records and how investors were then rating his performance. Here's a snippet first of Mr. Calhoun being cross-questioned by Senator Josh Hawley.
Mr. Calhoun, what is it that you get paid currently?
Senator, that's well disclosed in our proxy documents in each of the years that I've been employed.
Yeah, but what is it?
It's a big number, sir.
Well, let me help you out. It's $32.8 million this year. Does that sound right?
Yes, it does.
That's a 45% increase over last year. Does that sound right?
Yes, it does.
What is it you get paid to do exactly?
I get paid to run the Boeing company.
Yeah. So just help me understand that. I mean, do you get paid for transparency?
I think the board counts on me for transparency.
What about safety? Is that a component of your salary?
It sure is, Senator.
Oh, those are tough questions. Mr. Calhoun has been trying to allay the mounting concerns and win back the trust of aviation regulators and officials. And this was made more difficult when yet another whistleblower came forward just hours before that hearing. Anita Mendiratta is an aviation consultant and advisor to the UN Tourism Secretary General and joins me right now. Anita, what's your assessment of how Mr. Calhoun was answering questions there?
Dominia, thank you very much for the invitation to join you and for these questions. My assessment is one, firstly, I'd want to put this in context. What is happening to Boeing and the spotlight that it's on, it is a spotlight on the entire aviation industry, because ultimately Boeing is not only 40% of manufacturing a commercial airline, it's the front window of people's engagement with the aviation industry. The Senate hearings today were painful for two reasons, because not only was Boeing being challenged, Dave Calhoun, as the CEO, was being overtly challenged. And the senator that you called out in that soundbite went straight for the jugular on that.
Ross Gerber is also with us. Ross, your thoughts on how Dave Calhoun, although he said he apologized for the safety regulations that were allegedly not followed by the company, do you think this credibility that the company saw falling was restored with this Senate hearing or not?
No, not at all. I think it just proves that from the top down, there's just a culture that sucks at Boeing. And they've taken one of the greatest American companies that had a record of safety that like no other. I mean, these old Boeings are some of the best planes that have ever been made. And then they come out with these new planes that have all these problems. And the bottom line, people died. And this is like, it's crazy. You make so much money. And yet the company's done so poorly for its customers.
Absolutely. But Anita, what about from here on? Because we have seen that Boeing's production has been affected. Now, how does this impact the aviation industry?
Well, I think what Ross said.
So let's get Anita first and then Ross, yeah.
I think what Ross said was important as well, that it's not about what Boeing is saying it's going to do. They have to show proof of delivery. And proof of delivery literally is delivery of safe, secure aircraft that people trust, that regulators are passing. We know that the airline industry is already recognizing that there's going to be huge delays in aircraft that will never meet the demand level of the surge of travelers we're seeing. At present, there are over 28,000 commercial aircraft that should be flying, but almost 17% of them are grounded for technical reasons. And this is incredibly difficult. So airline CEOs, as was recently voiced at the IATA AGM, International Air Transport Association in Dubai, they are very frustrated because they know they have to relook their long-term fleet plans. They can't do the hiring they need in terms of pilots and cabin crew. They have to relook all of their forecasting ultimately. And they have to have the trust that these aircraft are going to carry safely and securely not only the passengers, but cargo, and of course, also military. And so this has a massive impact on the airline industry.
And let's not forget also on passengers, because what this means is there are fewer seats available and on those busy routes for holiday this summer. And that's why there could be a ripple effect on passenger fares as well. But Ross, also, here's a question about the Federal Aviation Administration, which is responsible for regulating the safety concerns for aircraft in the U.S. and whether they stepped off the pedal as well.
I really wouldn't blame them for Boeing's woes. I mean, the truth of the matter is flying in America and globally has never been safer in history. There literally has not been an accident in the United States from a domestic carrier in as long as I can remember. And so when you actually think about 25,000 flights a day flying throughout the United States without any incidences, you know, the track record is incredible for airlines. So the fact that Boeing has lapsed in their safety is a big risk to the credibility of the whole system. But I wouldn't blame the government for that.
But Anita, on this question as well, there is also concern that essentially it's a duopoly. Either you have Boeing or you have Airbus. And the problem with the aviation industry has been it's been too reliant on these two big players. Are there any other potential companies that could come in?
Very much so. That we've seen in the last 2 years the development of the C919 aircraft from China. And they've had some significant orders coming in at the end of 2022 from China Air or Chinese airlines themselves. So that's potential is there. Interestingly, and to your point, ultimately, Boeing and Airbus want to see more availability of airlines as well, because the whole airline industry is required from a global economy point of view, from social development. So, and especially as you say, coming out of COVID, we have a heightened appreciation for our ability to travel by air, to all the people and places that we love, for all of the trade that we require, and for global protection. So even Boeing and Airbus, Airbus is the first to say, we need Boeing to work through this challenge and to be able to rejoin the global airline community as part of the ecosystem that we're all responsible for, including regulators, very importantly.
For Boeing, how does it walk back from here? Anita?
It's very much about trust and credibility, and that is, again, by proof of delivery. They need to demonstrate their safety culture with accountability, transparency, empowering people to make comments when they need to be able to protect Boeing. We have 170,000, ultimately, ambassadors of Boeing in the staff complement that they have. They love the brand. And exactly as has been said, this is a symbol of American aviation capability, excellence, innovation. And the 737 MAX, interestingly, has been one of the leading aircraft in terms of sustainable aviation, with a 25% efficiency level that every airline in the world is looking forward to being able to bring on board. So this is a solution that the entire industry and traveling public wants us to be able to find and work through as swiftly and safely as possible.
Anita Mendiratta, thank you for joining us, aviation consultant. There are big news also, Ross, that we've been following here on World Business Report, as the White House has announced a new policy that could protect about 500,000 undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens from deportation. Administration officials say it will apply to those who have been in the country for at least 10 years and will allow them to work in the U.S. legally. Ashley D. Azevedo's husband is also undocumented, and so will be one of the people that will benefit from this new policy.
We've been married for 18 years. My husband is from Brazil, and we met, fell in love. He's a great man. We have a child together. Unfortunately, though, this undocumented status has prevented him from being able to see his parents back in Brazil. He has not seen his mom since he was 18 years old. You know, obviously now he's a full-grown man. He missed his father's funeral because of the inability to travel. So it's been very, very difficult, to say the least. It affects everything we do in our daily life, but we're hoping that this is the day that those things start to change.
So that's one family of Ashley De Azevedo who is hoping for a relief as soon as this program is rolled out, which could be by the end of this summer. But earlier I spoke to Dara Lind, who is a senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, for her reaction to this new policy and what it means.
What we have to remember is that a lot of people who are in the United States without status have been there for ages, right? Have been there for decades. And that's been a tremendous amount of uncertainty, right? They haven't necessarily had access to the jobs that they would have if they had full status, if they were permanent residents. What we would expect to see are people who, you know, are going to be at a variety of levels of education for a variety of industries, but who generally, to the extent that they haven't fully integrated into the U.S. economy, it's likely going to be because of their status, right? Or because of things that attach to their status, like maybe they haven't had the ability to, you know, like maybe they have health issues because they've had difficulty getting health care, or maybe they haven't, you know, been able to pursue a higher degree because of concerns about status.
For those who are eligible for this program, there are many more who are not. And I was going through one study by FWD.us, which says there are roughly 1.1 million undocumented immigrants who are married to U.S. citizens in the U.S. And this seems to be only addressing half of them.
Only about half of the people who are married to U.S. citizens have been continuously present in the U.S. for 10 years. There are likely going to be other requirements in terms of criminal record, in terms of, you know, being able to pay a fee. And just being able to demonstrate that you've been continuously present for 10 years can be difficult for some people because, by definition, it's not like they have, you know, tax forms that they can submit. But this is all kind of pencil estimates at this point. The government just doesn't have great information about this. And so it's possible that there's going to be a surprise one way or the other when applications actually open up.
And finally, then, politically, how do you think this will impact Mr. Biden, especially in the key swing states of Nevada, Arizona, Georgia?
What we know from past elections is swing voters tend to be less plugged into the news cycle than the average person. So I think that because immigration continues to be tied to the border for most people, this is going to be something that doesn't really have a huge impact one way or the other.
That's Dara Lind, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, speaking to us earlier. But Ross, your thoughts on it, because this is definitely a crucial timing at which this policy has been announced.
Well, you know, I've been there back in my single days. I was with a Canadian woman who was illegal. And she lived in fear, and exactly what this woman was saying. We couldn't travel. She couldn't visit her family. She worked in America, and she had been there for a long time. But if she applied for the visa correctly, she would have had to go home. You know, our system is really messed up here. So this is a great step in the right direction to help people out who are married and have families and make their lives better when they're contributing to our society. And America is a country of immigrants. And oftentimes the people who are here seem to forget that that's how we got to where we are, the greatest nation on earth, because we take people from all over the world and we give people opportunities that they don't have in the countries they're from. So I think it's a great move for Biden. And the more we can do to help immigrants in America, the better.
The great American dream, as they say it. But this is obviously a hot political potato. We'll be talking more about this on our sister program, Business Matters. Now, Italy's industry has summoned trade unions. Italy's industry ministry has summoned trade unions to discuss what would be the first ever strike at the Milan Stock Exchange. But talks will only take place after the planned strike has gone ahead. Unions Fabi, Cecil and Fisaccidil have said they are being called out for a fear of job cuts. And what they said were divestment plan from Italy by Bourse owner Euronext. Earlier, I spoke with Elisabetta Mercaldo at the Fabi Union's national secretary.
There are four areas of union claims. First, we have a deep concern for job security at the national level because project for the relocation of activity outside the national borders. We don't have guarantees provided by the group in this moment. And so we recognize that we want to be part of a decision in order to protect jobs and enhance existing professional skills. The second issues concern wages, as the company rejected the payment of salary increases provided by the renewed national collective labor agreement. So we want to protect all workers by price change experience over the last years. And the new collective agreement signed provides a pay rise of 435 euros, the most important pay rise within overall sectors in Italy, the private sector. So pay rise is a right that must be assigned to all employees. The third point concern is related to work organization, because colleagues experience systemic and structural recourse to overtime, work on Saturdays, which could have implication for us on workers' health and job condition.
But this merger happened in 2021, where Euronext completed its acquisition of the Italian Stock Exchange. So why are you protesting now?
After the acquisition from the London Stock Exchange Group, we know that we have two important facts: migration of the core data center to Italy and the centralization of the manager of the overall clearing activity of the group into the Borsa Italiana and trading platform. So we know that there has been, and it will be continued for the future, a strong value creation of shareholders and clients and cost synergies, as well as enhance the revenues for the group. But we notice that the job condition for workers, for employees, should be better for the future. The Italian banking sector, also if they have experienced few strikes over the last decades, we experience a strong participation. So it's the first time for Borsa Italiana, and we expect that it will be a strong participation.
Now, today there's a news that the industry minister in Italy has actually said that he is ready to meet the unions. But after the planned strike, are you still going ahead with this strike? Because in effect, the minister is ready and the government is ready to listen to you.
Because Borsa Italiana holds a strategic role for the Italian economy and the development of a business. So for the most, we recognize that the strike is important because it's a signal, a strong signal to the company. And the important thing is that it's not a political matter, although the government interest is appreciate the meeting with the government.
Do you think that you, because you're striking only for 2 hours, representatives of the Milan Bourse will be listening to you? It seems like a token strike action right now.
Yeah, it's a first step, a meeting with the company, with the government, a first step to provide, to have a climate which would be different. Also to have the occasion to discuss about the reasons.
That's Elisabetta Mercaldo, National Secretary of the FABI Unions, Italy's Banking Sector Trade Union, which has called for the first ever strike at Borsa Italiana, the National Stock Exchange. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp. As a podcast listener, you've heard from us before. Today, let's hear from our members about what online therapy has done for them.
I would recommend my therapist 1,000 times over. She has truly changed my life.
The day after my first session, my friends and family said I sounded like myself again for the first time in weeks.
You deserve to invest in your well-being. Visit betterhelp.com to see what it can do for you. That's better. HELP.com.
Now let's head to other part of the world. North Korea is an economy we don't talk much about, but it was in the spotlight as the Russian president made his way there. It's Vladimir Putin's first visit to North Korea in a quarter of a century, and he and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will now hold talks. The two countries have been under international sanctions and their relationship is in defiance of the West, which is also being closely watched by the US and its allies. So we take a look at what it means in terms of trade and economic benefits for Russia and North Korea. Hosak Lee Makiyama is the director of the European Center for International Political Economy.
There has been a flurry of bilateral meetings between North Korea and Russia for a very understandable reason, because first of all, North Korea has become something of an alternative source for weaponry, and the old stocks that North Korea happened to have are actually made according to old Soviet standards. So Russia and North Korean armed forces are basically more or less interoperable.
Are the two men friends?
It is probably fair to say that in terms of national security and geopolitics in Northeast Asia, there are no such thing as friends. There are only temporary alliances.
But looking at Russia's war economy and North Korea's economy, which has faced severe sanctions from the West, who has a better bargaining power here?
I think it's fair to say that North Korea is in a position where they are suddenly on an equal footing with Russia.
North Korea's economy, it's always been shrouded in such a mystery.
It is not really an economy per se of markets. It's basically a state budget which goes straight into the family Kim and the dictatorship, and which has an army attached to it. The people are completely dispensable.
So in this position, what can Russia offer North Korea?
Well, aside from cash and fuel and a way to circumvent the sanctions, we also need to remember that Russia is a member of the P5, the permanent members of the Security Council. So from that point of view, Russia is a formidable ally for North Korea to get out of its corner. In terms of looking at medium term or even long term, Russia has become a pariah state, offers North Korea remarkable opportunity in terms of strengthening its own bargaining chips and, first and foremost, advancing its nuclear program.
How do you see this particular meeting playing out for other actors in the region?
For me, it's evident that the real nexus between the Pacific and the Ukraine war is actually about North Korea, because Russia's need for arms have opened up a completely new opportunity for North Korea in terms of access to R&D and nuclear program. This would, of course, have secondary effects in terms of if, let's say, North Korea would get access to satellite navigation systems, that would escalate the arms race in the region. You are seeing already, actually, North Korea has actually played a role in moving both South Korea and Australia towards a direction where they might become nuclear powers in the long term.
That is Hosak Lee Makiyama of European Center for International Political Economy. Ross, you're still with us. Quick thoughts.
Yes. With North Korea? I mean, Russia is really desperate. I mean, you know, North Korea needs money, obviously, and has weapons, and Russia has oil money, and you know, they need, you know, supplies. So
absolutely.
You know, well, it really shows how pathetic Putin has become.
Well, we leave it there. Ross Gerber, president of Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment, on World Business Report.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for people.
17 members of Zambia's national football squad have been killed in an air crash. The players were on their way to Senegal for a World Cup game.
When disaster struck Zambia's national football team in 1993, many thought that was the end of the country's international football dreams.
These guys had a desire to take us to the World Cup.
The whole country was mourning.
Instead, it was the beginning of one of sport's greatest comeback stories.
We have to go on. We can't give up. We don't give up in Zambia.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents the four-part series, Copper Bullets. Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.